Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Listen.
This week on Unboxed, I'm joined by Jimmy McLaughlin. Jimmy is a former special advisor to the Prime Minister, who worked at Number 10 advising the government on business, entrepreneurship, and what the future of our economy could look like. With his podcast, Jimmy's Jobs of the Future, Jimmy brilliantly shares the exciting roles that are being created every single day by entrepreneurs and shows what the future of our economy could be. Let's get into it with Jimmy. Jimmy, welcome to Unboxed.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Amazing. So I would love to know about you. Obviously, you've had an incredible career, done a whole host of different things. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, how you got from, I guess, starting out to where you are now?
Yeah. So I guess it's that classic question of how do you sort of describe yourself when you meet someone? And I say now that I'm a former Downing Street advisor turned podcaster. So I used to advise the Prime Minister, which was perhaps almost a even more impressive line. It's been over the last year.
Which Prime Minister?
Exactly. Which Prime Minister? Yeah, were you in charge of organising the parties or were you only there for 45 days, etc.? So it's like, but that's my kind of background, was in sort of, was in politics. But a few years into my career, I sort of really got interested in the kind of entrepreneurship space and that side of things.
I mean, how many people do you sit in a room with who've had that experience? Is just mind blowing. So what was it like, right, being asked to do that? And then what was day one like? Like, what happens tangibly on the ground when you start? You're like, yep, cool, I'll be your special advisor in this area. What does it mean to do that on a day-to-day level?
The thing is, there isn't really a sort of template. There isn't really a book on how to be a special advisor. So, you know, a lot of it is you are sort of given, you know, one of the world's most powerful email accounts and sort of told to kind of get on with it a lot, really.
Yeah.
So there's a huge amount of trust there that you have to build quite quickly. And I'd known Theresa May for a number of years, and particularly her chiefs of staff, which kind of allowed for that to happen. And one of the things that she said to me at the beginning was, you know, the economy is going to go through some big changes with Brexit, and we need to make sure that small business and entrepreneurs' voice are being heard, because big businesses, you know, the likes of Tesco, BAE Systems, have big teams to kind of engage with government and understand this. You know, actually, we need to be in, you know, listening out for small businesses, etc., and particularly those fast-growing scale-up businesses as well, right? So that was a big part of my job, was to try and find these fast-growing companies and sort of engage with them in Number 10 and so forth. And, you know, one of the classic ones we'll talk a bit about was kind of inviting Ben Francis of Gymshark to Number 10 for the first time in sort of 2017, I think, and kind of getting hold of businesses like that and understanding that way that the economy was changing from a government perspective, and how do we do it? And, you know, your work with the Sidemen as well. And one of the things I'm struck by when you do it is you talk about them being an international export. And that's true. That is a sort of, you know, it's a British company, British guys doing something, which is then being sort of sent all around the world. And that is a very interesting way for how exports are changing. You know, it's not the producing a box and then exporting it and putting it on a ship and so forth. So that was a lot of what my job was about, was trying to understand that sort of frontier of the economy. How is it changing? How could we take advantage of it for Britain? And kind of advising the Prime Minister on how to do that.
Yeah. And in terms of that engagement piece, was it you as a representative of Downing Street going out there to business leaders, to people who you thought were needed to come in and share their insight? Like, what was it with Ben Francis, for example? What was the kind of trade-off in that experience or relationship, both sides?
Yeah, it was exactly that, right? Like, I mean, you take a company like Gymshark, it doesn't really have much need to kind of engage with the government, right? It's not a regulated sector. It's producing clothing. But it's employing, you know, almost 1,000 people now in the West Midlands. That's a huge story, you know, and how do we sort of understand that? Because one of my jobs in Number 10 was to sort of be that link between business and the PM. So lots of businesses want to speak to the PM about various things and so on, but there just isn't that much time for them to do as much of that as they would like because they've got all these other issues that they're dealing with. So you're kind of acting as like a filter system for the Prime Minister on that in terms of the information and news that they're getting. And so when it comes to a story like Gymshark, you want to highlight that. Partly because I would often get the phone call at sort of early in the morning saying, you know, the Debenhams chief exec saying, we're about to make 12,000 redundancies, et cetera. And it'd be my job to go into the 8 a.m. meeting with the Prime Minister and explain that and say that. And she would often say, but we're still at record high employment. Where are all these new jobs coming from, right? And that is, you know, that's from entrepreneurs like yourself and lots of other people that are creating one or two jobs a week. Never makes headlines, but actually there's a big
thing there.
That's
the sort of build-up, okay.
That's the big thing.
And then in terms of the companies that you're alerting, it's the ones which will make news, the ones which will have an impact on, in this case, Theresa May, right? That's why Debenhams came up in that conversation. What is your view on this world of creators? And from a governmental perspective, both here and I guess observations around the world, what should be done to kind of seize the opportunity? Because I see personally a massive, I mean, even in industry, people don't really understand just how impactful and important this space, in my opinion, is, let alone government, who is traditionally even more behind, right? So what's your view on the whole space?
So I think there is a big mismatch in knowledge and information about this. And I don't think Westminster particularly understands the kind of creator economy very well. I don't think that's even a phrase that would sort of be recognised. Yeah, they would still think of it very much as a kind of influencer economy. Mm. And that doesn't have a great reputation, particularly in Westminster, but I also don't think it has a very good reputation sort of more broadly as well. But I think,
why do you think that is? I'm interested.
Because I think it's seen as slightly superficial. Yeah. Now, I think that's unfair because I think for people to build these massive followings, it requires much more skill than sort of people give credit for. And actually, there are real authorities that are kind of being created in this space. And so I think at the moment, it's probably a lot of the sort of influencer stuff has been around purely entertainment. But one of the things that I think has been interesting since the pandemic, you're also seeing the growth of online courses and all this type of thing as well. And I think that's fascinating because that's then becoming an educational project. And that's a shift from entertainment. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. And what more do you think government needs to do to bridge that gap?
The irony is that politicians are influencers, right? Like we've all been sort of influenced. Mm. Those in the media are actually, yeah, why did a journalist go into being a journalist at the Times or the Spectator or whatever? Well, they probably went into influence. Now, the ways that influence is changing is enormous, and everyone kind of has a voice now. And I think that's one of the fascinating things about it. But there's all kinds of challenges with how do you label people and so on. I mean, I think it's, you look at all the sort of fury that's been around Gary Lineker over the last few weeks. The part of that comes from the fact that 10 years ago, Lineker wouldn't, to have known Lineker's thoughts on immigration would have been quite difficult because he would have had to have been asked about it.
And he'd have no platform.
And he'd have no platform.
Other than the BBC.
Other than the BBC. And he wouldn't open Match Today by talking about immigration. But now he's got, yeah, he's got a platform and he feels he needs to say things. And I think that's, so is he a broadcaster? Is he a journalist? You know, what are these that, you know, is he an activist?
And where are those lines?
Where are those lines? And I think it's very difficult.
Mm. I remember I went to Number 10 to speak to Ed, who's the head of digital there now. I don't know if he still is, but he was. And part of that whole conversation was actually they've got this whole social team, this team around building the personal brand of at that time Boris Johnson, creating his socials, as if they're the bigger team than most creators. Yeah. You know, but this is for the Prime Minister. So what do you think? Do you think that will at some point the penny will drop on that?
I think so. And I think it probably is doing. And I think, you know, politicians, you know, because again, sort of creators, a lot of what they're doing is communicating their their message in the different platforms. And that's always been very key for politicians. And actually, politicians are pretty good at sort of getting onto a new medium and being able to kind of work out the best way to do it, because they have to go where the people are, and they have to kind of communicate that message. Because it's not like it was sort of 50, 70 years ago where you'd have a town hall and, you know, people would turn up in hundreds to listen to politicians. That doesn't happen anymore.
And what things do you think creators can learn from the world of sort of traditional business? So you've obviously been around, you must have learned so much from all the entrepreneurs and business leaders that you've spoken to. What are some of the biggest things that, you know, for us, for example, we're launching brands, we've got our fried chicken business, our vodka business, and so on and so forth. What are the things which you think we should be taking from, I guess, the, you know, these amazing entrepreneurs that you had access to? What sort of differentiated them at the top?
So I think the building a following before building products is now really interesting. You're basically building market and distribution before products. I think it's fascinating. I think that will become much more important. I think the things that creators can learn from traditional business is that whilst there's a huge amount of disruption in entrepreneurship and business, fundamentally, you need to be able to create a product for less than you sell it for. And you need to be able to get that product in front of people, and which is marketing, and you need to be able to persuade people to buy that product. So actually the fundamentals of business are all still sort of the same. Now the tools that are being used to do all these things are completely different.
Ultimately, after Atlee, you have no one there, because your product has to stand up on its own 2 feet. It has to be, you know, loved by people who hate the Sidemen as much as people who like them at its core. And I think if you've done that, then hopefully, well, you know, as we're trying to do, we've maybe done a good job. But yeah, I completely agree. Right. So moving into your podcast and to this shift that took place during COVID, right?
Yeah.
What was COVID like for you, firstly? And why did you set up this podcast?
Yeah. So it all starts when I left Number 10. So I left Number 10, end of 2019, and Boris Johnson had come in as Prime Minister. I'd worked with him before. He said, "Will you stick around?" And I said, "Well, I will, but we are starting a family and I don't think I'm going to be able to be a good spad and a good dad." So it was time to sort of leave and do something else after kind of helping with the initial transition period. And then March 2020 happened, and we all remember our March 2020 in different ways. My wife ended up going back to work because she was a doctor in the NHS, and I became a stay-at-home dad to our five-month-old at the time. So I'd sort of gone from Downing Street to diapers. And it was this kind of like quite big mind shift that was happening. And you know, you all know, trying to look after a 5-6 month old when you can't see anyone for 12 hours a day is tough. So we listened to lots of audio, and I kind of came across podcasts in particular and thought, is there something I can do to kind of help tackle the unemployment crisis coming up? And I thought back to that conversations I used to have in Number 10 and thought, yeah, what are all these sort of, you know, jobs of the future and so on? And so, yeah, kind of created Jimmy's Jobs of the Future. And I suppose what I've been trying to do over the last couple of years with it is become sort of like the Martin Lewis of jobs, really. Yeah. And the challenge is for schools and for parents who won't necessarily understand a lot of these jobs. You know, going back to the Gymshark example, I sometimes look at the Gymshark careers page and I think, I don't recognise any of these job titles, right? And I'm not that, like, long in the tooth, he likes to say. but, you know, and so I think it's a real challenge. So that's what we do with Jimmy's Jobs of the Future, is interview entrepreneurs and thought leaders about where they think the future of the economy and jobs are going. We had Rishi Sunak come on the show when he was Chancellor, and, you know, I sort of pushed him a bit on, you know, if you were starting your career now, where would you go? And it's interesting because he actually sort of said, I'd probably do something in the creative digital space. And I think that's interesting because, yes, Rishi Sunak graduated in sort of early 2000s. And that's when a lot of the sort of top graduates went into finance and banking. Then obviously there's the financial crash in 2008. And then in the last 10 years, you've had a lot of people kind of go towards the sort of big four consulting, as it. And then in the last five or so, I think you've seen a real shift to entrepreneurship and people wanting to do their own thing and often being kind of creators as part of that. So I think it's a big part of where the economy is going. I mean, when I go into schools, you know, I say, because the two things that come up all the time are data and software engineering, right? Are the two things that we're really short of. And if you ask kids who wants to go work at Apple, Google, Facebook, Microsoft? You know, good half the room will put their hands up, and then you'll say, well, who's going to go study engineering? And it'll be a smash. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. That. Yeah. And so I think it's really important to kind of get that message out there, that, you know, the sort of the building online and all the things that, you know, because a lot of people want to be YouTubers now, or they want to be creators. And I think trying to explain more of what goes in behind that to make all these things happen. You know, that's one thing I've appreciated as now term podcaster. Huge amount goes into these. If you want to make something good, then huge amount needs to go into
and
it.
And there are so many roles in the back. And I guess a lot of kids and younger people, when they're at school, they don't know what's, they can't see beyond even university really. You know, we have thumbnail designers who are making six figures, and they're 16 years old from the Philippines or whatever, and they're killing it. And these kids are, there's so many of them, editors, poster designers, all sorts of creative roles now, which if you can identify and find that niche and ultimately be good at it, you can make a crazy, you can make a career at any age. Like, there's no barrier to entry anymore, I don't think, right? So, yeah, and I think also to your point on software engineers, and, you know, I think young people see the shiny end goal of you know, all the money, the success, the fame, which can happen to people now in a way that it definitely couldn't. So those jobs become a bit less attractive, right? When it's actually, if I make content for myself and I get it out there, I can actually change my life, with especially with TikTok now, where it's almost encouraging at a hyper pace, the idea of sort of transient attempts to go viral, like constantly trying to make my life from this, you know. And people are, I think, doing it, which is why there's, it's probably going to be even harder to attract the software engineers and the people behind the scenes, you know.
I think that's true,
Where do you see this space going? I know we touched on a bit before, but what's your kind of bigger viewpoint with all of your brilliant experience as to where the space is heading next?
For the creator economy, I just think it's going to be a bigger and bigger space, and people and the channels that you're able to use now are going to be, you know, bigger and bigger, whether it's short form video, whether it's pictures, audio, writing, you know, all of this is going to be it is really exciting. It's hard now because a lot of people have already built established audiences. So often it's, you're kind of, for people that are starting out, it's a bit harder than those people in the early days. But I think the algorithms and the platforms are quite aware of this, and that you've seen it since the pandemic, particular sort of Instagram and TikTok kind of allowing people to have that sort of, you know, that that sort of moment. It's that kind of George Orwell, everyone will get their sort of 15 minutes of fame. And that's where I think it's interesting, because actually I think the space is like, you know, you do a lot of this when you're kind of investing in companies and whatever, right? You're trying to assess the market size. Will the market size grow, et cetera? And actually, that's one of the interesting things on a lot of these, is that the market size, I think, is ripe for growth, because I think there's a lot of people that aren't aware of the different creators and so on. And you're gonna see more of that in terms of, like, I mean, it's even interesting, like, you know, the BBC Radio 2 lineup and the way that that's sort of changing, and the way that kind of comedians are coming in more to do a bit of that and so on.
But it's like, you know, even think about film and the amount of castings which are done based on followers, based on your influence. And that's, you know, added marketing, which is now almost a given for major film releases to have people with an audience coming into them.
Yeah.
And what does that then mean for talent versus audience? How important is talent when audience really dictates and drives sales? So again, even that whole mindset of influencer kind of numbers, reach, personal distribution, that has to have an impact on everything, because ultimately, why would a brand, or why would a, you know, a production company or a commissioner go with somebody over here with zero followers versus somebody with 100,000 when that 100,000 is immediately an audience to market to? And so it's like that impact alone. And again, it's that speed, right? It's the speed of distribution, not having to wait for somebody to blow up and become a star through their work. They already have that platform. So I think, yeah, it's that speed of distribution and the ability to get audiences, which is shaking everything. But it's just how quickly will people adapt, I think, is definitely the challenge, and we'll see. All right, finally, I wanted to ask you a last question, which is, who is a creator? It could be a podcaster, it could be anything that you are loving at the minute.
I watch a lot of what Cole Anderson's doing on TikTok and so on. And one I've always liked as well, it's sort of very different, but this was a while ago. This was when I, probably my first entry into the sort of awareness of the creator economy. It was about 5 or 6 years ago when I met a guy called Andrew Brough, who's Mr. Brough online, and does a lot of the kind of GCSE and A-level educational sort of videos. And you just, I remember watching them then thinking, gosh, that is so engaging for a young person. We've taught education on a knowledge-based system a lot of the time. And actually, yeah, well, when you can carry all the knowledge in your pocket in the world, then why does it
matter? What value does it have?
I remember teachers saying at school to me, well, you won't be able to take a calculator with you everywhere you go.
So well,
we showed them, didn't we?
Now,
yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so there we are. That's a long-winded answer in a classic politician format for
that's
you.
That's great. Look, Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on.
Unboxed with Jordan Schwarzenberger is a Listen original in partnership with Arcade Media. The exec producer is Amber Bateman, the senior producer is Lucy Hunt, and the senior digital producer is Alice Tilley. Unboxed is recorded at PRL Studios in West London with the support of Michael Kalizinski.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.